Hey, this is John Williams. We're about to bring you the Mincing Rascals podcast. Before we do that, I just want to remind you that and thank our friends at Kelly Cruises for sponsoring the Mincing Rascals. Kelly Cruises is planning a trip to France next July the 30th. Essentially, we'll be in Paris and up to Normandy in August of 2019. We're going to start with a two-night stay in Paris. How awesome is that? Then we're going to get on one of those fabulous riverboats, which are surprisingly luxurious. I've been on one of these AMA Waterways boats before, and we're going to go up the Seine to Normandy. We will be on the beaches of Normandy on the 75th anniversary of D-Day. Just imagine the history and majesty of all of that. And then we'll come back to Paris. The ship accommodates 150 or so passengers, and we have 40-some spots left. And this is for a trip that's over a year away. Point being, boy, you need to make reservations now or at least call 630-990-1111 or visit kellycruises.com if you're even thinking about it. Remember, our trips are always all-inclusive. That means that all the food, all the beverage, all the soda, beer, and wine. There'll be cocktail parties, the excursions, the bike tours. You want to get on a bike. Everything is included. Call 630-990-1111 and join us. Today is Thursday, July 5th, 2018. It's 11:11 in the morning. Hi, I'm John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio. You can hear me weekdays on WGN from 1 to 3, Saturdays from 10 a.m. until noon.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and the co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Patty Vasquez, and I host Monday through Friday from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., unless the White Sox are playing, and then who knows what's happening.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
Some of our other colleagues who normally join us, like Krista McQuarrie and Eric Zorn, can't join us today, but I'm actually going to read from Eric Zorn's piece about the 4th of July in just a minute. Incidentally, here's a trivia question to start the show with for you guys. What do you call the stretch of I-55 from the southwest suburbs to Pontiac, Illinois?
I know what we call it now.
Well, that's the question. What is it now?
That's the Obama,
Obama Highway.
The Barack Obama Presidential Expressway.
Did you not like that when that happened?
What's that?
Is that why you remember it? Because I always find that people who don't want something to happen remember it more.
No, I don't care.
Okay.
I really, it doesn't affect me one way or the other. It seems they name things after things here a lot.
Yeah. Do you know where the Jane Addams is?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be a good question, because for people who are from the city, maybe we know, but maybe we aren't that good at it anymore. But certainly if you're from outside the city and you're listening to traffic here on this radio station and we say out to the Jane Byrne or on the Reagan, even on the Eisenhower, what does that mean if you're looking at your GPS or your phone?
Yeah, I can tell you my GPS doesn't understand any of this.
Yeah, well, we went through a regime here that insisted for a while that we stop using the nicknames and only the numbers because of the 15 people who might be driving through.
Oh, that's right. By regime, you mean program directors and managers,
right,
of our voices.
Which was,
and what was your reaction?
Well, it was stupid. I mean, well, we're in Chicago. We call it the Dan Ryan, you know. And if you were going to call it 94, 94 is three different areas. Okay. And it's very difficult that way.
I'll bet you if we had like seven, you know, if we did a matching like you do when you're taking your test in school, and we'll put I-290 from, you know, downtown to the suburbs, what is that called? And then, you know, you'd have to match it to the Eisenhower. How many people would know where exactly the Reagan is, or the Jane Byrne is, or the Barack Obama is? You know what I mean? I'll bet folks wouldn't get them all right.
Oh, I think folks would get half of them right.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless
the north side
would
get
them.
The Kennedy.
But they don't. It's irrelevant unless you drive it. If you drive it, you know it.
Oh, you don't have to know it, no.
Right.
Words.
Right.
Yeah, tell that to your teacher when you're turning in your paper. Actually, but I'm not going to need to know this.
I tried that in algebra and geometry.
The lawmaker who put that forward said, this is not political.
What?
But it's the very essence of political. It's a tribute. I guess that's political. Maybe it's not. But I don't have any problem with calling the road that Barack Obama, he said, used to drive on his way to Springfield as a state lawmaker, naming it part of it after him.
Why can't you name something after a former president of your state?
Yeah,
and
right.
Have it not be political. I mean, I don't think it was done for political gain. It was done to honor someone.
Yeah, and we're all on board honoring Barack Obama that way.
At least.
Here's the problem with it.
Let's name this building after Barack Obama.
Do you remember when they commissioned the Jane Byrne Spaghetti Junction? Spaghetti Junction is Jane Byrne Exchange.
Spaghetti Bowl.
Spaghetti Bowl, right? It's where the three major highways meet in the city.
Yes.
And it's an engineering marvel. And Jane Byrne, one of the last, you know, things she was able to witness in life was this sort of dedication of that. And I felt a little bad for her because because it's not a pretty area. You know, the overpasses and underpasses and the untended lawn areas that are around a major intersection like that.
And if you drive on the wrong lane, you end up in Indiana for no reason.
Like, totally.
And no one deserves
it. No one wants to.
And nobody says, nobody has good feelings about the Jane Byrne, right? The Jane Byrne is always a cluster of traffic. The same way, I'm not sure if for some reason, someday, I accomplish things so great. Chicago said, boy, we got to name a highway after John. I would take a pass because they're going to go, oh, crap, it's backed up on the Williams. Your name is associated with
just like in life.
So, I don't know.
I get on the Edens every morning and find out how long it's going to take me to get to the Jane Byrne.
Yeah,
you know, and so it keeps her mind a little more, or her name a little more present in my mind.
Well, if they have a parkway or a brook or a stream or a section of the beach in Chicago that doesn't have garbage all over it, name that after me. But otherwise,
we'll get you a bench somewhere.
Exactly.
Sure.
And keep the birds off it while you're at it.
I don't think any of us are at risk of worrying about this.
Speaking of roads, Father Flager is still planning on shutting down the Dan Ryan with a march on Saturday at 10 a.m. This is the Southside activist reverend who is very much involved in that community, and he said, we're not going to get any attention about the shooting of people on the Southside unless we literally shut it down from 79th to 67th. Patty, are you in favor of this sort of...
There are always people in this country who point to Chicago as this violent city, as murder capital, and say, why don't they take care of themselves? And then when someone like Father Flager comes about, and has for decades, try to draw attention to it, they're like, well, but not like that. Don't draw attention. Don't get in my way. Don't inconvenience me. And that's the idea of disruption. And people say, what about Martin Luther King? Why can't he do it like Martin Luther King did? Only Martin Luther King was disruptive and did shut down
towns. This is right out of Martin Luther King's book.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I have to say that I'm of two minds of this. Firstly, yes, absolutely. All the other protests, and they've had hundreds, maybe thousands of them, have meant nothing because they've been through the neighborhoods. No one covers them. And when they do cover them, they don't. It's a big fat meh. So this is something that's going to bring attention to it. What I don't care for, and that I haven't heard yet, is that what is he protesting? He wants to bring attention to the violence, but is he bringing attention to a solution?
Well, what did Martin Luther King, what was the solution for racial...
Voting Rights Act, Civil Rights Act. I mean, there were tangible legislative achievements he was looking for. And
changing the lunch counter access, changing the bus access. Well, you could sit wherever you want.
And so
very tangible things.
My understanding is that Flager wants, you know, stricter sentencing, prosecution of gun violence, you know, gun control of guns coming into the state.
I bet if you asked him, he'd have a list. I mean, maybe it's our fault for not asking.
I think it's our fault. Yeah. It's certainly the newspaper.
That does get lost. I think Scott has a good question here. But I also think Scott's question is kind of impossible to answer. What we're saying is, what is the solution to poverty on the South Side?
Resources. They've been choked off for decades.
Yeah.
You know, we've closed down over 50 schools. Nobody wants to invest there.
But Scott's shy of an answer. Do you think, therefore, they shouldn't protest?
No. I still think they should. If for the very simple reason, just to bring attention to this issue, that, you know, this is the violence, the weekly. I mean, you listen to Steve's newscasts and you hear this, it's almost a scorecard. You become numb to the entire process, and this stops that.
Well, and they'll say, well, but people are going to be pissed off. This is actually going to turn people off to your cause.
Look at the protests yesterday at the Statue of Liberty. Now, there were a lot of tourists who wanted to go out and visit Liberty Island.
Did they really have to evacuate the island because one lady climbs up the base?
I don't know, but it's the best thing she could have done for those tourists because it's the biggest waste of money in tourism is to go out to Liberty Island.
Not.
It's just a waste.
You have not been there.
I have. It's watch it from the coast, see it from the shore, but to go out there.
You didn't get a little choked up when you saw the passages through which the immigrants first came into this
country?
That's
Ellis Island, not Liberty Island.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Liberty Island is just the statue. to and tourist trap. It's beautiful, but you don't need to go out. Anyway, but her protest was she did disrupt that. They evacuated the island. They stopped the tours going out there. And so there were a lot of people who were probably angered by that. But there's a much bigger audience who saw the great symbolism of this woman talking about immigration abuses in this country and her climbing the Statue of Liberty to make it. So I think the message trumps the disruption when it comes there. Now, it might not be equal on the Dan Ryan, but I think that's an example.
Well, I think it's very similar.
Yeah.
So using that logic, then, you're on board with Father Flager.
I think so. I mean, you know, you're right. You can't keep marching up and down King Drive.
But you're a guy who comes from the North. And you will not be on the Dan Ryan on Saturday.
Do you know which one it is?
The Dan Ryan?
Yeah.
It's out by O'Hare, isn't it?
Well, don't you think symbolically?
No.
That's the thing, right? Is that the I'm not sure what portion they are going to shut down, but we do just drive through and pass
right.
neighborhoods that we don't give a second thought to. And I've often been of the mind that people would just assume that if a neighborhood is having a problem, especially on the south side of Chicago, if it's Englewood or Roseland or Gage or Austin Gage, that you know what? Just let them take care of it. Just wall it off and let them kill each other. That seems to be the mentality of people. And Father Flager saying, this is where we are. Meet us where we are. And this is where we are struggling, where we are in pain.
I'm looking here, Scott, for the number of people that were shot over the 4th of July.
It was a lot.
Yeah, I know.
A girl being among them.
Right. And if that had happened in my old neighborhood, I used to live in LaGrange Park. If that had happened in Naperville, if that happened in Des Plaines, if that happened in any of the collar counties or more affluent city parts of Chicago, we... It would be covered so differently. The reaction would be so different.
The police response would be totally different.
The political response would be so different.
Well, in communities like that are always the most resistant to give opportunities, whether it's housing or employment, to people who come from the neighborhoods who need it the most. On the northwest side of Chicago, they're trying to develop housing that would be either affordable or for veterans or for the disabled, and they don't want it because here's the thing, is that you know they would say one of the reasons they don't have that kind of crime is because they don't let people like that in. That's the unspoken truth or often spoken truth on those kinds of communities.
Okay, so when we drop this next podcast next Thursday, this shutdown of the Dan Ryan will already have happened. Predictably, people are going to say that only makes it worse for their cause. But our prediction is that even though we'll hear that, better they do that than not at all, right? Scott's on board shutting down the Dan Ryan. Patty's on board.
I'm on board.
Bertrand is
I mean, I'm sorry that they have to do it, but and don't go to Liberty Island.
Do you know, did you guys see this? Speaking of America and the 4th of July and all that jazz, what percentage of Americans are either very proud or extremely proud of being an American?
What percentage
would you say today would say when asked, you could be extremely, very, kind of, and then on the other side, not at all, et cetera.
Oh.
So what percentage of Americans say they are very or extremely proud to be an American?
I'm going to say it's higher than you think. I'm going
to
say 40.
Proud to be an American.
Well, at least
extremely proud?
Combine them, very and extremely.
Oh, combine very and extremely.
Because extremely was the highest, then very, which to me is like, I'm not exactly sure I agree with the semantics there, but that's like, you know, a 5-star or 4-star, and then there was a 3-star.
I kind of want to guess the 5-star. I kind of guess it's around 20%.
I need a number.
20%.
20% of people say they're extremely and very. Combined.
Oh, combine the, combine. The closer to 40.
70. Lord, how many times do I have to explain this? I'll read it again.
Because I think it's more interesting to know who's extremely, like, no matter what, without any...
What percentage of Americans are either very or extremely proud to be an American?
I'm going with Scott in the 40s.
40s.
70.
Oh. 72%.
72% are very and extremely.
Wow. Okay, but you know that's...
Moderately is 16, a little is 7, and not at all is 3.
That's interesting.
I am not extremely proud to be an American right now. I don't think I'm very proud to be an American right now. I don't think American values have ever been more challenged or disrupted. And by the way, maybe challenging them is a good thing. Maybe we need to rethink what that means. But I don't feel good about the way this
Tell me the number, the choices again. Were there two, three of the five? No. No, I asked
five
because
options.
It's just it's one of these stupid, it's a stilted question.
Well, thank you, Steve. I worked real hard on the podcast
because it's obviously going to be positive. The point of my question is, of course you're going to say you're proud. Or
really?
I guess my choice. The thing I'm trying to bring up is there were five responses.
Yes.
Three of them were positive.
If right? You include so right moderately, away, is, yeah, moderately.
Right. So right away, 60% of the choices were.
All right. But don't you think it's interesting that only 1 in 10, 10% said I am a little or not at all proud? I mean, to listen to talk radio and read editorials these days, you'd think a lot more than 10% of us are not jinky with how things are going.
So who's more likely to be less proud? The Trump supporter, because there's a lot of angry out there. They don't like this country and where it's headed. Or the Trump opponent?
I think Trump opponents would be less proud.
Right, but the Trump supporters are the ones expressing anger for everything in the way it is.
I'm curious about this because I'm trying to wrap my mind around why Trump supporters are so angry. If they have all three branches of government, what is there to be so angry about? The sounds of our voices?
They don't have the
dissent.
But right, I mean, you don't get to have our complacency.
They're in the front of the line. They're not used to being up there, and they don't know how good they got it.
Is
right
it disorienting? Now. I don't know why there's so much rage.
They're waiting for the space arm of the armed forces.
The Tribune editorial today about that was actually pretty good. I can get to that in a second if you want, but I think that this 72% saying they are either very or extremely proud. I don't know.
I agree with you, John. I think that it surprises me because you said the values that we say we embrace, we clearly aren't currently.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, the default is going to be that you love your mom, that you don't hate your mom, right? So it's going to be much harder for someone to say. And you also could take it as a long view or a short view. You know, am I extremely proud to be an American over the past 42 years?
Right.
Yeah.
That's not what it says here, Steve.
Past 24 months,
I think
less.
This is a litmus test of right now.
How likely would that's all the 70% who are very and extremely feel if they're traveling abroad? Are they wearing American flags on their backpacks? And are they carrying? I mean, I'm just curious because when I've 20 years ago when I went to Europe, I told people I was from Canada.
Well, who among us four has recently traveled overseas?
I have. Scott has.
And
I have. How are we doing? How are we doing globally, guys?
They are mystified by us.
Yes.
I wouldn't say they're angry at us. I just think they shake their head and wonder.
I think mystified is a good word. I was in Norway where the president wants people to come from.
And so we love us some
and
Norway.
And they're perfectly happy where they are.
White, you know, smart.
I think the ignorance that we have as Americans a lot of times is, and this is a great land of opportunity. It's a wonderful place. I'm glad I live here. But we tend to think we're the only ones who have it right. And when you go to other European countries, which is my experience, not others, and you look at, you know, whether it's Denmark or Norway, where I just was, or Ireland or wherever, you know, and see, damn, they're doing okay. They do it a different way. You know, I keep bringing up the statistic. Norway is oil rich. They're drowning in oil. 30% of the cars in Oslo are electric cars because they know that fossil fuels are not the way to go. When we're drowning in oil or natural gas, you know, we start selling the gas guzzling cars. You know, I mean, I think that there's a much longer view there. So I don't know how I started into this rant, but you know, I get ticked off when people here who've never been there think that just by default we're so much better off here.
Well, we have better sports, let's face it. I mean, you know, we can touch the ball in America.
You just don't like soccer.
It's okay. No, but like, I think I've had the same experience as John's. I just came back recently from Italy and France where people were not mad, but they looked at you and they just right. go, and they hear you're from America. Are you from America? I go, yes, I am. And they go, Trump? And just like,
yeah.
It just hangs there.
And the president's name is on the front page of newspapers all around the world. You know, I mean, you can't read the article afterwards, but you know that they are paying attention to who we are and what we do. And it does make you, if you're worried about your safety, depending on where you are. If you're in Turkey, maybe you do want to tell them you're from Canada or some other part of the world. I mean, I think that the sort of hostility the president lobs out at anything that disagrees with him doesn't make it easy for Americans to self-identify when they're abroad.
Well, when I say I was in England 20 years ago and I told people I was from Canada, it was because every time they would hear us talking, they would consider us to be rude or loud or stupid Americans. And I got tired of it and I was like, I'm from Canada.
Oh, so that was pre-Trump. That
it was 20 years ago. So imagine now.
Well, the thing is, we can't hide it anyway. If you are an American and you were traveling abroad, you might as well get a sign.
Yes. That's why I wear a Canadian patch on
my back. We're wearing Nikes. We have blue jeans or Dockers on. We are anti-fashionable. We don't wear scarves if we're men. You know, it just goes on and on and on. We are so predictable.
I was in a French restaurant, I think 15 years ago, little restaurant, and a woman was literally a few tables over raising a stink. I could hear her because they didn't have Heinz ketchup.
No! See?
Just go see her. You're ruining it for all of us, lady. Right. Shut up.
No. Yeah.
So I had some in my wallet, and I gave it to
her. You never want to be without. With some as an American.
Between the bullets and the... Right.
I'll bring the sriracha, you bring the ketchup.
I have a friend named Ron Cox who will not go anywhere without French's yellow mustard. Oh. You know, the equivalent of Heinz ketchup. But, I mean, we'll be on a luxury ship sailing to Greece, and whatever the trip is that we're on, he will carry with him. It will be in his suitcase. And then he'll squirt it on the whatever it is that he's having, which, by the way, are usually French fries. It's just funny how we give ourselves away. Here's what our colleague Eric Zorn said in the Tribune on the 4th of July, or was this on the 5th or the 3rd? An Axios Survey Monkey poll released June 27th asked nearly 4,000 respondents, how much do you think the traditional news sources report news they know to be fake? False or purposely misleading.
Okay.
This is a response by, he said, Republicans. What percentage of Republicans think the media is doing it on purpose?
Intentionally broadcasting news that they know is false.
Correct.
What 70%.
65 is the answer. 65%. Zorn writes, Democrats have a more positive attitude, but they're not exactly cheerleaders for journalism. 20% of Democrats think major traditional media frequently publish fake stories. 20%. 29% think most journalists are dishonest. 6% think the media are the enemy of the people. 11%, I'm describing Democrats, think freedom of the press has gone too far. This ought to frighten you. We have a president. We have a president of the NRA. We have right-wing media, which has just gone on a rampage against the media in this country, and I think Zorn rightly points out that it's not just championing our industry. I mean, because journalism done right promotes democracy, and that's all of us. Well put, Eric.
I agree, but
yeah.
There was a Pew study out not too long ago. But here's the problem. The dupes are easily duped, and there was a Pew study out, and they presented people with factual stories and opinion stories. Now, this wasn't true and untrue, but it was fact and opinion. And the people who put the most faith in the media were the most able to discern the fact from opinion. The people who put the least in were the most likely ones to not understand what they were reading. So what you have are ill-informed people out there that are just being picked off.
Yeah, yeah.
And that Scott and I were on the air following the shooting in Annapolis at the Gazette, and we were, you know, the news had gone at the top of the hour, and I often try to explain to folks that the news that the, you know, Steve and Andrea and Domati, those are our journalists, and they do the news at the top and bottom of the hour, and when news breaks, and we talk about it, you know, we are the ones doing commentary. And after the shooting, I said, we don't know what happened yet. We don't know if it was a workplace violence, if it was a grudge, if the words of the president landed on somebody, that the media is the enemy of the people. And we had a caller telling me that I was being, it was bad journalism, what we were doing. And I had to explain to her that I'm not a journalist. I'm a commentator.
Did she think that the president was somewhat responsible for it? Or
she thought that what I was doing was bad journalism. That I, just talking about that possibility was bad journalism.
Well, you know what? I posted a fairly lengthy thing about this. I don't think that Donald Trump's name should be involved in the Annapolis shooting story.
In the following moments and the idea that journalists have a target on them, I don't think it was a bad thing to put in the mix of the culture.
I understand
because two things were true. The president said that the press is the enemy of the people, and there was a shooting that day. So two things were true. I just put it out there.
And couple that with, what's his name, that bat crap crazy right-wing Yumpalumpalus or Snuffleup?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
said,
Milo.
The same day said pick off journalists.
He said, "I can't wait for vigilante squads to start gunning journalists down on site." That's what that guy said
that day.
Yeah.
So
when you are in the media and you're feeling and they're adding security on our floor, you know, you wonder what the level of conversation and
I just think
anger.
I'm not disagreeing with anything you guys said. And I see all of the dots, and I don't mind connecting them, but I don't think you can say it was causal, right? That this guy did not say, I'm taking Trump's words to heart, I'm going to shoot up
this newspaper. Initially it was reasonable to
I think
the reporting I heard, and I didn't hear what you were saying, Patty, but the stuff I was listening to live on cable TV was, you know, at a time when journalism is under attack, and they didn't necessarily mention the president. In fact, they clearly tried not to mention him by name, but alluding to his comments and comments of others, you know, so they tried to say this is the atmosphere we're under right now.
And yet a couple of days ago, the president was once again describing the media, the mainstream journalism, as the opposition. You know, at some point, I think somebody is going to make him their cause. But I don't think that was – I think it's too easy. Let's not generate that where it does not.
And to the 65%, if I can just kind of shift gears a little bit, to the 65% that said that, you know, journalists fake things. I mean, Steve is a great example, but and there are other examples.
Of journalists who fake things?
No. Of the ones who don't.
Because I don't think Steve fakes things. I think that's not fair.
Fake news. No, but every journalist I've worked with, and I'm coming up on 40 years in this profession, every single one of them, regardless if they were left, right, centrist, always their number one edict, their number one thing that drove them every single morning of their live professional lives was, I'm going to get the story right. Do they always? No. And that's because of the erosion of the news media as we know it. So you don't have the filters to vet. You know, how many times have you had a story sent back by a good editor who said, you don't have it?
Right.
And this happens over and over, and it still happens over and over again. So anyone, the 65% who think that a journalist of repute would somehow perpetrate a story that is untrue can go to hell because it's simply not true.
Matter, Patty.
Well, no, I'm just thinking about, both of those things, right? People feel as though their ideals, their opinion is under attack by a story that they don't agree with. And that's true of the president. And it was true of the shooter. The shooter felt that he was being unfairly treated by this newspaper.
It was an attack on journalism, right?
Right.
That is no doubt. It was also personal. There was a woman involved, et cetera. But
he thought they were being unfair to him. They thought they had done something wrong to him personally. He took it personally.
I just want to quote from Eric Zorn again. He wrote in his column, anyone who's been in, this is your point, Scott, anyone who's been in the business for 2 days knows that articles that are well reported and fairly presented are by far most powerful. That's how you get it done. Even if you have an agenda, Zorn says, the way to do it is accurately and fairly, not by just trumping some stuff up. He said, lying is a career-ending, is a career-threatening, reputation-shattering move at reputable news outlets where mistakes are routinely retracted and fabulous demoted or fired. And lastly, he says, the news media, a free press, are, for all their flaws, integral to democracy, which in turn is integral to the freedom that we so ostentatiously celebrate this weekend. Our patriotic cliches are nonsense if they are not buttressed by a robust, independent free press that publishes without fear. And finally, history repeatedly shows that those who brand truth as lies fertilize fascism. Well put, Eric Zorn.
Yeah, I mean, even when he's amazing. Not here, he's here.
I was going to say, he doesn't show up and he still gets more airtime than me.
I was going to say, when I'm not here, are you playing clips of my show? What's happening?
I have a crush on print journalists, can you tell?
But I think that here, we celebrate the 4th of July because this was established as popular sovereignty, the voice of the people. We are governed, it's our choice. And part of that is journalism, is to have the opinions and the guardianship of the people through, you know, whether it's through the press or freedom of speech. And I think that we should be aware of that. And the fact that people think, they think they're being manipulated by the liberal media, that's why they think it's all fake. What do they think the goal of the journalists is to manipulate them?
It's just so easy to say the media is fake, that is hostile to their beliefs.
And that's the thing, isn't it?
And that's the president's mantra. And it's, like Steve's saying, well, it's harder to kind of be educated and know the duped are easily duped. It's just very easy to go, wait a minute, I don't like that. It's fake. It's wrong. It's not true. That works for Donald Trump.
And this is, and again, you said it's easier, right? And that's why less than half the population that's registered to vote doesn't even bother. It actually bothers to show up. The majority of people aren't voting because it's just too hard.
Okay. You know that survey that said that you guys like so much about, are you proud to be an American? 72% said they are, extremely or very. I want to ask you guys one last question before we go to our recommendations. That about Chicago. you are from the Chicago area. Even if you don't live in the city, we are all Chicagoans. We all identify as Chicago. Are you? How would you gauge your proud to be Chicagoans if you travel to other parts of the country or abroad?
I'm extremely proud to be a part of Chicago.
Are you just saying that?
No, I'm absolutely extremely
good for your
proud
image.
To be part of,
look at his face.
No, I'm happy to say, when people ask me where I'm from, I'm happy to say outside of Chicago. I can't say Chicago because the Chicagoans deserve that more than I do. But yeah, I'm absolutely proud to be part of
it. And then when they go, oh, but what about the violence or what about these terrible politicians?
It's some of the bad stuff about a truly remarkable place.
Yeah, that's exactly where I am. How about you, Pat?
Extremely proud. And when people ask me about the violence or I see it on social media, I push back because that's a misunderstanding of what our city is and that I aspire for better in this town. I know why there are a lot of communities that are struggling and why there's more violence there. And I'll have that conversation with anyone who wants to start one.
Yeah.
Scott?
And I agree with Steve. I think he put it beautifully.
Yeah. Recommendations for the week. Patty, why don't you go first? Something you're reading, eating, drinking, watching, recommending. What do you like?
I've been watching my family's decided to go back and watch all the... This is so corny and stupid because no one likes Jurassic World that just came out. Yeah. But we're watching all the Jurassic... Oh, no. I do have one besides Jurassic. We're watching all the way back to the beginning, which is so much fun to revisit.
Netflix just posted the first three, right?
Yes. But there's a series called Thick of It from the aughts. And it's about a minister the social minister in England. And it stars Peter Capaldi, who is the 12th Doctor. Yeah. And it's also the creator of the series Veep. So it has that sort of documentary style. A lot of vulgarities, but we're having a lot of fun watching. It's really fun.
And the name of that series is?
Thick of It on Amazon Prime.
Steve okay, Bertrand, since we're like? Sticking with British government, I watched this week a series, three-part series, called A Very English Scandal, starring Hugh Grant, which I did not know about this scandal. Jeremy Thorpe was the labor leader in the late 60s into the early 70s. You know the story?
Yeah.
And he was gay, and so he had this sort of wistful lover in the 60s who kept popping back up into his life. And of course, at the beginning, homosexual sex was illegal there. And he had to continue to sort of put this guy off. So Hugh Grant stars in the series, and it starts very seriously, but becomes almost not farcical, but it almost becomes a comedy in ways as it looks how the Jeremy Thorpe, played by Hugh Grant, and his cohorts try to keep this guy at bay. And ultimately they can't. There's a very public trial, all in the early days or right before the days of Margaret Thatcher. It's on Amazon, and it's called A Very English Scandal.
I'm glad to hear that Hugh Grant's doing something because I miss him. We love him.
Well, he's doing very interesting things. He played the husband, young husband of Meryl Streep in that.
Oh my God, he was brilliant.
He was brilliant.
What was the name of the film?
I can't.
She plays the singer who can't sing.
She was nominated for an Oscar last year.
Oh, that's right.
I'm glad you said that because I was thinking of these roles he's taking. They're very unattractive, unflattering, but they're great for him.
Yeah. He's terrific.
That's lovely.
Scott, what are you liking?
Two things. Firstly, by the time this posts and by the time it airs on Saturday, this will be over, but we're having a moment of silence throughout the Tribune Publishing family for the five journalists who lost their lives on the attack at the Capital Gazette today. So I would suggest if when you hear this and when you hear this moment of time, take a moment to think about these people and think about what it takes to be a journalist and how many of us get threats and our families have to live with that. And the second recommendation is the Special Olympics are this week.
Yay.
And they're broadcasting.
That's right.
50th anniversary.
And I love watching this because, you know, when I think, oh my gosh, I lost my office. Oh my gosh, my chair is itchy at work or some other ridiculously petty small thing. I go, you know, a life is pretty damn good and to take it to its core like that. And so, yeah, watch the Special Olympics as it'll make you a better person.
Touche. I was complaining about the size of my office with the window view out the 18th story overlooking the river and lake.
Do you want to come down the hallway? There's three of us in our office now.
Bertrand said,
I have to say,
he has a locker.
He has a locker.
I'm sharing a cubicle with Eric Zorn.
Oh, see, that's,
that's
punishment
right.
enough.
Yeah.
You poor thing.
He's all limbs, that guy.
He's like that thing that came out of the spaceship in Close Encounters at the end.
You know, Krista McQuarrie is very proud of her fresca and tequila margarita, and she's recommended that in the past. I'm going to recommend a cocktail for you. It's an Aperol Spritz.
I recently started trying Aperol, and it's tasty.
It is, and it's a colored liqueur.
It's a little bit almost
melony
woodsy.
It's not like a heavy berry, mm-mm, but it's delicious. And what you do is you take 3 parts Prosecco, uh-huh, 2 parts Aperol, and then a hello, just a dash of club soda, garnished with an orange. Oh my gosh!
I would also recommend Aperol with a little with vodka and soda. It's tasty, too.
No kidding. Really, Aperol with vodka.
With vodka, yeah.
Okay. Get my head around that, and that would work.
And soda. Yeah, it would work very well. Yeah,
can we get them to sponsor this podcast?
They kind of are. I'll maybe report back to you if I feel strongly enough to recommend it, but we've just started watching Glow.
Oh, I love Glow. Oh, so you're on the first season?
What a bizarre show.
I haven't seen the second season yet, but I love the first
season. They just dropped the second season, so we're plowing through the first to catch up. But yeah, it's the story of a guy who had an idea for a all-female World Wrestling Federation in the 1980s,
yes,
maybe. The soundtrack is awesome. You love the music that they play sometimes. I'm not sure how good it's going to be, but I'm intrigued. It's been fun.
Well, the whole casting process, I just never even thought about how they choose wrestlers. And you have all these women who are actresses or saw an advertisement, or just women who like felt like they were freakish, whether they were big or strong or, you know, but they just want a job.
Did you watch the first season?
Just now getting through it.
Okay.
Have you seen it yet, Scotty?
No.
And by the way, today's July 5th. If you read the Sun Times today, they have a profile of the, you know, the black woman who's the one that's training them, mm-hmm, and is also one of the actors in the wrestling TV show. The guy that plays her husband is a Chicagoan.
Oh.
And in fact, he's in Chicago this summer doing another series.
Mark Maron's great in that, too. Cast is great.
That's Patty Vasquez. Scotty, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Stantis, Steve Bertrand had to exit stage left. He's on the radio in a few minutes. Ben Cortez, once again, is the engineer of the Mincing Rascals. Thank you, Ben. It's produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.